you're asking for their input, not because you're sort of abdicating all decision-making and you're just going to do whatever they ask for, but because what they're telling you tells you a lot about what will work for them, what they care about, what their priorities are.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Dave Hirsch, CEO of InTandem. So Dave, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. InTandem connects a diverse youth population trained in design thinking with organizations looking to incorporate youth voices to improve their products, programs, and services. And I wish we had more of this all over the world. They handle everything from training a cohort of youth partners and coordinating schedules to regulatory compliance. Expert voice, both youth and adults, can focus on creating the future while they take care of the rest. Wow, that's a lot. And I don't think I've encountered anybody else that does this particular thing. So Dave, let's start at the beginning. So why this thing? Why does InTandem feel like this is important?
Yeah, thanks. It does sound like a lot when you put it that way, but actually the idea is exceedingly simple. You know, it's a very sort of basic user-centered design concept. Is solutions work better when you engage the users of that solution in the design of that solution. It's a very sort of simple idea. And so our thinking was like, that applies to young people the same way it applies to everyone else. And yet nobody engages young people in the design of the things that affect young people, whether we're talking about schools or social media, really anything, policies, everything. Young people are sort of systematically excluded from participating. And if you think of it that way, we shouldn't be terribly surprised that so much of what we do doesn't work for young people. And so like take schools, for example. You look at some schools that have a chronic absence rate in excess of 40%. That means 4 out of 10 kids are basically not using this free service that's supposed to be valuable. That should tell us something about the design of that service. And one sort of thing I always like to think about is like, imagine you just opened up a free all-you-can-eat buffet in the middle of a town and nobody showed up to eat the food. Would you wonder if there was something wrong with the people, or would you wonder if there was something wrong with the food you were offering?
Right.
Or the place you were offering it in, or where it was, or where you... And so these are all sort of user-centered design problems. And so our sort of grounding hypothesis is things will work better for young people if young people are engaged in designing. Like, it's really that simple. But that led us down the path of, wait, then why aren't people engaging young people, right? Every educator in the world has access to the young people they educate, right? App designers theoretically have access to the users of those apps. Policymakers, if they really wanted to, should be engaging the young people that their policies affect. Why aren't people doing this? And the sort of basic idea from experience, from doing some market research, is there's a lot of friction involved in engaging young people. And so where we went with that is, cool, we'll just remove that friction. If we remove the friction, people will do this more. If people do this more, stuff will work better for young people. That's sort of the basic idea. And so we launched in July, and we've been sort of testing this hypothesis at a high clip of, if we remove the friction, how many people are going to actually take advantage of this? How many organizations will try to engage young people? And it turns out a lot, which is good.
Okay, so I want to dig in a little. I mean, I know where you're going with this, but I want to make sure that our listeners really have a good sense. When you talk about the friction that our industry partners might have, from their perspective, what is that?
There's a range of frictions, some of them like actual barriers, some of them just misconceptions about what it's like to engage young people. So I'll start with the actual barriers, just the basics. So even where you might have sort of direct access to a group of young people, you don't necessarily have access to a broad range of young people. You have a little bit of a convenient sample problem, right? And so if, you know, if I'm an app developer in San Francisco, I have access to kids in San Francisco, maybe family members, whatever. Like if I really want experiential information, I'm limited to the people that are close by. And it's not my core competency to go like source a reasonably representative pool of kids from around the entire United States. So the basic like recruitment of a group of kids to do this work with is one of those frictions. Another is like most people don't fundamentally know what you are and are not allowed to do with young people, right? So there's a lot of friction in the uncertainty around that, not just what does it take? What kind of approvals do you need and all that kind of stuff? But like not even knowing what you need means you're going to be more scared of it than you might otherwise be.
Correct. Yeah.
So ambiguity friction, if you're familiar with sort of the terms from the human element. And so we handle all of that stuff, right? So we get direct parental or guardian consent if the young people haven't achieved majority yet. If they have, then we get their consent. We always get young people's assent, whether they're minors or not. So that's some of the stuff we take off. Everybody has a general sense that you should protect the privacy of the data. So if you're going to engage people about their experiences, it's likely that they're going to share something that's personally identifiable or otherwise sensitive. What do I do with that? How do I protect it? So we protect the young people's data. We have a very rigid privacy policy, super high standards. So we just sort of take that off your plate. The coordination of the activities, right? Let's say I've got the consents. I have a group of young people and I know how to protect their privacy, but it still remains that you have to coordinate where to be, when to be there, what to be there for. How do I make a teenager show up for this thing at 5 p.m.? Like that kind of stuff. So we do that too. So we coordinate all the activities, make sure that the right people are in the right places at the right time. So we take that. So that's all the sort of what I'll call like logistical friction.
Yeah. You know, I think that it's really interesting when you stop and think about the fact that in so many cases, right, as educators, and you're a former educator as well, right? So you understand both sides of this, which I think makes you uniquely not just qualified, but I assume the perspective, right, that you bring into this work is, you know, really in understanding all of those different elements. But one of the things that we certainly see at PASS Foundation is the idea of educating means to stand and deliver something to an individual. We do it to them, right? We don't do that with them. We don't, in many cases, we fool ourselves that we're even doing it for them.
Yeah.
You know, and the reality is, and, you know, any great educator knows this intuitively, is kids very much want to be involved. They want to voice, they want a choice, they want to engage, they want to co-design with you. And the minute you take the experience away from this sort of rote delivery of something and turn it into an opportunity to be fully engaged, it's a game changer for those kids.
Yeah, it's a game changer for the kids, but it's also so much easier and more pleasant for the adults that are
100%.
Right? Like, The beauty of all this is it's process as product, right? It's that the act of engaging young people in the things that affect them is itself a valuable thing. Mm-hmm. And so what you're engaging them in and the outcome, that all probably should improve too. But if you're really authentic in the engagement, that engagement itself is valuable. And so and that's very different than the sort of transactional mode that we're used to in the classroom, which is, you know, we could spend 10 podcasts on how we ended up in this space where everything in a classroom is super transactional. But that transactional piece is sort of removed when you recognize young people as agents of their own solutions. It takes the burden off you as the adult. It's not just that you're doing young people this great favor, that you're this sort of knight coming in, saving them by giving them a voice in the things that affect them. You're giving yourself the break of not having to be the sole source of all solutions for all young people. And that's a huge thing we try to sort of remind people of, is it's not an abdication of your duty. it's a release of a responsibility that you couldn't possibly ever handle on your own, right? It's something that it's a promise that you can't keep, right? You right. can't know what will work for everybody. And so that's, I think, sort of a big thing. And by the way, one of the source of frictions that we get a lot is like, sort of, I'm an adult. If I give up agency to them, what if I don't like the result? And so we have to sort of, we do a lot of socializing around that, because that's an emotional friction that adults come into this space with. And very often it's based on a sort of misconception about what the purpose of that engagement actually is, right? So like we get this a lot is, you know, if I'm an educator, if we ask kids what they want school to look like, they're going to want 8 hours of lunch, or they're going to want like, and one, no, they're not. Like that's not actually, that's a wild, wild oversimplification, and there's some misguided sense of what kids would say. But two is you're asking for their input, not because you're sort of abdicating all decision-making and you're just going to do whatever they ask for, but because what they're telling you tells you a lot about what will work for them, what they care about, what their priorities are. And so you're asking for their expertise, not in the ultimate decision, but in their experience of the world, so that you can use that. And one of the sort of analogies we've used or metaphors we've used that seems to be pretty helpful is like, when you go to the doctor asks you a whole bunch of questions, or should, if they're doing a good job, a whole bunch of questions about how you're experiencing life, because there is no way the doctor could possibly know that.
Correct.
They're not doing it because you're going to become a doctor because you have medical training and you're suddenly self-diagnosing. They're engaging you because they don't live with you. They're not in your body. There's no way they know what hurts, where it hurts, why it hurts, any of those things. So they have to engage you to ask those questions. So in the educator's take, like the educator is trained in a particular set of things like a doctor is, but the educator, like a doctor, needs to know and understand the experience of the people they're educating so that they can actually craft that experience in a way that will work for them. So so anyway, we do a lot of that socializing to sort of support the friction reduction around the adult's sort of emotional barriers.
And I appreciate that very much. And I see those exact same things. So it's always good to hear somebody else sort of put those same thoughts into words. So when you talk about the adults in these equations, right? So are you talking about people in industry that are then going to be the recipients of these students coming and participating in their R&D? Or maybe it's and or, right? That you're also then talking about educators who are, so I guess part of what I'm trying to get at is to sort of help our listeners understand where's the originator of the need to have this experience and the mechanism that then drives students, as well as our industry partners, right, into this relationship. How do I get here? Like, how do I, a student, find my way into participating in whatever the heck it is that In Tandem's got going on Tuesday afternoon?
Yeah. So we think of it like, and forgive me if this is like terminology that's not common for most people, but like it's a classic two-sided marketplace, mm-hmm. right? So, and without the sort of like negatives of whatever people think of something like Uber or Airbnb or any of these other things, any two-sided marketplace is essentially a service to both sides of that marketplace. And the service to both sides of that marketplace is the reduction in friction and connecting the two together. So a credit card is actually like the best, simplest example. But in these cases, what you're doing as the sort of intermediary, which we are in our case, is you're finding impactful matches. And for us, an impactful match is a young person who wants to be heard, or a group of young people who want to be heard, being matched with an organization or adults or people who can be more impactful for young people by listening to them. So it is literally one of our jobs, one of the reasons we exist, is to go out and find as many of those organizations as possible, right? So in the same way that Uber needs to find as many people who want to take a ride or need a ride in a car as possible, in the same way Airbnb needs to find market to whatever, as many people who need a house in a new city for a couple of days as possible. We need to find as many organizations as possible who are doing impactful things as young people, but need to engage young people to make those things more effective, more impactful. And so we do like an insane amount of discovery conversations with organizations, because most don't come to us with like, I'd like to engage young people. They come to us with like, we're not as effective as we could otherwise be. And then we have this conversation to figure out if the reason they're not effective as they could otherwise be is because they haven't engaged young people. And so that process leads us to a very wide range of organizations and use cases. You have a flipped classroom curriculum developer who realizes that in a flipped classroom, the end user of the curriculum is the young person, not the teacher. And so realizes that if I'm going to do decent user-centered design, I should engage young people in the design of this flipped classroom curriculum. AI is another common use case. I'm building an AI tutor. The user of the AI tutor is a young person. I should engage young people so that at least the UI is okay. So educational technology, broadly speaking, is sort of a big part of our user base. And how you get to sort of young people on Tuesday is you're having conversations with these folks and you've figured out that, yes, there is a lot of impact that can be gained from them engaging with young people. So we're going to facilitate that engagement. And you map out what those series of engagements look like based on the series of questions that they have for young people. So ideally for us, you're engaging young people throughout the R&D process, from problem definition all the way through to the development of the MVP and prototype, all the way through to like the bringing the thing to market and iterating based on the experience. That whole R&D cycle, they should be involved at all stages. That's the ideal version. It's not always the case. It's not always the point that people come to us, but
right.
In any case, you're mapping out based on their needs. What kind of engagements? Is it a focus group? Is it one-on-one interviews? Is it sort of larger scale stuff? Is it a co-design session? And then you schedule them. You just literally coordinate them and schedule them. And if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesday because that works both for the organization, the adults in the organization, and for the young people that we've paired them with. And so our role is to sort of do that matching exercise to stick it on the calendar.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hacking school.
So the students are participating. They're lending their voice to whatever it is that's happening. So let's go back to that app developer, right? So that's what everybody understands. So I'm curious, what happens if you have a group of kids participating in that who are like, I'm really interested in this and I want to give you more than just my voice. I want to truly be a co-designer. I want to learn to code. I actually want to lend you my talent. What happens?
It depends. So in many of the engagements that we facilitate, the co-design is sort of the rational next stage after that initial engagement. And sometimes it's literally built in from the beginning. So we have sort of what's called an impact plan that's based on how the organization is going to get impact from engaging young people. And it literally just sort of maps out, like, here's the things we think we can gain impact from doing. And in some cases, it starts with, I just need to understand their experience of this thing better to get started. So there's one-on-one interviews or focus groups aimed at gaining experience. And then very often the next step is, and based on that, I don't want to, as the adult, design the solution based on my understanding of that experience. I want to co-design the solution because they're the ones that actually have that experience.
Right.
We'll facilitate that co-design session the same way. And you can imagine that sort of continuing through each phase of the process. Now I'm going to build an MVP. Can they help us build the MVP? Now I'm going to prototype it. Very natural. Like, yes, absolutely engage with the prototype and tell us how it worked. Like, that stuff's really easy. We're not set up in any way to like automatically turn our youth partners into interns for these organizations or anything like that. Like, that's not really our core competency.
Right.
They do end up sort of in community with the organizations that they work with. And our hope, as sort of a side benefit of this work, is one, they're learning a realistic, they're getting a realistic experience of what these people's life is like,
yeah,
this work is like.
Yeah.
In a way that's a little bit more authentic than like, this person comes to your school and tells you about what their day is like. Like, you're 100%, actually seeing, yeah, the problems they're solving, how they're solving it. And so it's very possible that that could at least like help young people realize like, oh, this is really cool. I would love to have these conversations all day.
Yeah.
We have like other partners that we might be able to like connect folks with or do some brokering, but that's not like, that's not what we exist. We're not like a placement agency in that way. So,
yeah.
So we don't directly do that, but our hope is that in some way it leads to that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's totally fair. I could just imagine my listeners going, wait a minute, what about? So I always want to try to jump in and ask those questions that I know they're thinking about. So let's circle back around then, you know, and ask the question, okay, so then how do you find the kids? Where do they come from? How does that piece of your work work?
So the short answer is all over and as many places as we can.
Yeah.
But the longer answer is we don't have the best possible answer to that yet. We are 6 months in. We recruited this current cohort. So there's roughly 180 young people in the cohort right now. We recruited this cohort before we existed.
Wow.
In Tandem wasn't, in fact, we didn't pick the name In Tandem really until we had young people to co-create the name with. And so there's a little bit of a chicken or egg problem because you're recruiting with no brand equity of any kind. And so we spun up like a really, really basic website just so that there was some kind of online presence that they could interact with. And then essentially had to do a very relational network-based approach to recruiting. So we went through either networks that we already had. I mean, I say we, there's 7 other people on my team. The we is the 8 of us working together to scrap this thing together. And what we did was we sort of reverse engineered a recruitment process from sort of targets we had around diversity. And we mean diversity in like every possible way you can think of it. Academic performance diversity, right? We're not looking for 180 honors participants and AP students. We're looking at geographic diversity, right? If you're going to work with app developers, they all have access to kids in the Bay Area. Like, how do you ensure they have access to kids in Appalachian, Ohio?
Right.
And so geographic diversity, rural, urban splits, obviously demographics, like all of these things. And simultaneously, we are really, really wary of tokenizing kids based on their characteristics, even really narrowly defined intersectional characteristics. We don't want to tokenize kids as like, you're the representative of all kids that have those 8 characteristics. And so we're super careful about that, which means we actually don't even ask for a lot of the characteristics, and we don't ask for almost any of them at the recruitment stage. So that presents a challenge, which is how do you recruit and target if you're not tracking based on asking all these questions, right? So like, we wanted a neurodiverse cohort. How do you know if you're not asking those questions, right? And so the way we did that, and again, we didn't do it perfectly, but the way we did that was we said, who should we network with that works and supports these groups of kids? And we essentially had an oversampling strategy. So if you're looking for groups of kids in rural areas, you find partners in Appalachian, Ohio, and you ask them to aggressively promote this and put the word out and get this stuff out. And you're a little bit more aggressive about that than you might be about places where you might be overrepresentative otherwise, where, right, because they knew us from our prior history or anything else would otherwise be overrepresented. So it's essentially like a sampling strategy that we will continue to refine over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds perfect. So I know what the industry partners or the organizations get out of this. What do the kids get out of this?
Yeah. So I will tell you my answer, which is like the adult version of why we created this and what we think they get out of it from all of our various adult ideas. And then I'll tell you what the kids told us they want to and actually do get out of this, because we sort of engage them. In fact, we just finished 6 months in our engagement of them around, why did you do this? Because we want to be tracking towards what they're hoping to get out of it, right? Not what we think they should get out of it. So the adult answer is they get to be heard, right? We sort of address the deficit in the hub sort of being heard in their experience. They get the sort of hopefully the agency from having adults come to them, not because adults are doing them a favor, but because adults need their help. Right? And so they get to experience being needed by adults, and very often being needed by adults who are in sort of positions of authority, right?
Yeah.
Like successful adults, objectively successful adults, people who run businesses are coming and asking them for their help. By the way, have you ever read, Dave Yeager's new book, 10 to 25?
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
If we take that sort of the basic founding logic of that book on its face, one of the most foundational needs for adolescents is to be validated, to be needed by people in positions of authority. And so in some sense, we're trying to provide exactly that foundational thing. Again, really core to that is they have to actually be needed, right? Like that is sort of what it means to for this to be authentic. And in a sort of more immediate way, we're addressing, it's not just that they're needed and they're being asked about their experience and that other stuff. They're going to get to see what changed because they weighed in on it, right? And so we do what's called loop closing, where all of our partners have told us what the impact they're hoping to get is. When they get that impact, hopefully they always get it, but when they get that impact, we share that back with the young people who participated to ensure that they get to see, this app is different because I weighed in on it, or this
right,
is different
right. because I weighed
in. Yeah, so the agency, the self-efficacy, that kind of stuff. They get fellowship, they get, you know, hopefully a sense of belonging with young people in all kinds of situations from all kinds of different places. So the network is I think, a value. And then there's like a really, really simple, straightforward thing, which is they get money. So we facilitate sort of their compensation by creating what's called a non-qualified scholarship based on points accrued from participating in this educational experience that we call In Tandem. And the more they participate, essentially, the bigger their scholarship gets. So
that's awesome.
It's not negligible, actually. One of the most fun things, one of the best experiences I've had so far is, so they get their scholarship quarterly. And so at the end of the first quarter, literally our first quarter of existence, I signed a purchase order for essentially what was $110,000 of scholarships to go to 178 young people around the country.
That's awesome.
Really, really fun and sort of a nice sort of like proof of concept moment. Like if nothing else, it's pretty cool to be able to disseminate that kind of scholarship for this kind of book.
Oh yeah.
And so that's obviously a big one. So those are all like my adult answers. What the young people told us, what our cohort told us is actually remarkably similar to that, which was a relief to me. So there were sort of three dominant themes in why they signed up and what they wanted to get out of it. One is they wanted to feel like they had some say over the world they live in. And so that's sort of like your classic agency one. The second one was closely related, but they wanted to feel like things were different because they participated. And the third one is sort of what I'll characterize as general personal development. They just had a sense that they would grow from this experience. And I certainly hope that's the case. I think, you know, you highlighted an example of where that should very much be the case, which is like, I learned how to engage with somebody who's building an app. And I've also learned that I might want to build apps myself.
Exactly. Right. And I've also equally learned that I don't want ever to have anything to do with app development.
Right.
Right. I mean, because the kids don't know what they don't know. They have no idea because they've never experienced X, Y, or Z. So how could we possibly expect them, right, to be able to make really critical choices about, you know, I'm going to go to this school or I'm going to go to that college or I'm going to take that job based on what?
Yeah.
So it's fabulous.
I love it. It's one of the more like sort of absurd things we do to young people is we like create path dependency as early as like seventh grade. Like they have any idea or should have any idea what they're going to want to do in 10 years. Like 43 years old, I'm in my 9th job, 10th job, something like that. And I still would never say, like, I'll tell you exactly what I want to do in 10 years. Like, I wouldn't do it. And yet we ask young people to do it all the time.
We do all the time, right? We say, you know, when they're little tiny kids even, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Really? Stop asking that question.
Yeah.
Stop. It's not fair.
Wildly unfair. Yeah.
Wildly unfair. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, it's amazing. And here's one of the things that I know and love. Anytime I talk with really creative and innovative people like yourself, I find that suddenly we get to the end of our conversation or where it's supposed to end, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I could talk to Dave for days because this is so interesting and intriguing. So unfortunately, I can't do that. But my point is that, you know, I think that for the folks that are listening, this is cool. And, you know, I interview an awful lot of people on this program. I think we're 300 episodes in. And as an anthropologist, I interview people all the freaking time, even not on the show. And this is cool.
Thank you.
This is really intriguing. We've not bumped up against something quite like this before, and it's so desperately needed in our own work at PAST. You know, I jokingly, but I'm serious about it. You know, I would put our kids up against any R&D team in the world.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because these kids have been scaffolded to have the confidence that they can opt in and have any kind of idea that you could imagine. And it's okay to share that idea and that some sliver of that idea might actually be a global changing solution.
It's amazing.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and just the very possibility of it is enough to make it worthwhile.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's enough to keep those kids coming back over and over again and wanting to create their own programs, their own whatever it happens to be. And I can't imagine that the kids that are participating in Tandem aren't having some of those same experiences. Pretty awesome.
Gosh, I hope so. They'll certainly tell us if they're not, which is great. As you know, if you actually open the door to it where they trust that you're going to listen when they tell you, they will tell you that you're not delivering on what you promised. And so it's one of the things that gives me a lot of comfort is there's no world where we won't know if we're doing what we set out to do, because they will absolutely tell us if we're not.
Yeah. And as they should.
Yeah.
100%. I love it. Dave, thank you so very much for taking time out of your day to have this conversation with us. Looking forward to seeing what's next within Tandem as you sort of dig in your early days here. I can only imagine what's going to be possible with this.
Yeah, I like to imagine that all the time. But yeah, maybe we'll catch up later and I'll tell you how it went.
I would love that. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.